Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Imagine feeling trapped inside a multiverse of your own memories, reliving childhood trauma like a video game that never ends. This is the dilemma of Erica, the main character in the new multimedia off-Broadway play titled American Televisions, where time is fluid and some of the character's stories are sometimes told through live video from the play, which is then presented through giant television projections on the set. We first meet Erica's family in a Walmart in the 1990s. Let's listen to a clip of the family talking about their shopping expeditions and favorite meeting place, the television aisle. Oh, I think our clip is not available. We will. Oh, do we have it? Yes, we have it. Let's do it.
We're a family of illegal immigrants.
We're.
I said we're.
No, as in we were a family of illegal immigrants.
We still are. A family.
Maria Jimena, don't be ridiculous. You f*** up.
And Alejandro died. And we don't shop together anymore. You're right. We were a family.
And then, after 9 months of being here alone, I had enough money to pay coyotes so that my whole family could come over. Alejandro was 7 and Erika was 2. Less than 2. That was a long time ago. 10 years. 11 years.
And we don't watch television together anymore. And we stop shopping together. Even when we were together, yes, we'd all be in the same store, but in different aisles. Worlds apart.
The guns, hunting, and outdoors aisle.
Toys, boys.
The television aisle.
And this is where we'd all meet when we were done.
While touching on themes of capitalism, consumerism, immigration, and identity, the show tells the story of an undocumented Mexican family in disarray after the death of Erica's brother, Alejandro. Erica's parents have a stressful marriage, and Erica looks to escape the weight of their grief and her mother's gender expectations. Her best friend, who seems confident, happily obsessed with Barbies in the toy aisle, has struggles of his own, but is always there for Erica. American Televisions, a co-production with Theater Mitu, is running at New York Theater Workshop until Sunday, October 16th. Joining us now to talk about the show is Tao, playwright in residence at New York Theater Workshop, Victor Caceres. Victor, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Allison.
And joining us today is Theater Mitu founder and artistic director and American Televisions director Ruben Pulendo. Rumbo, nice to meet you as well.
Nice to meet you. Thanks for having us.
Victor, what? I saw it on Saturday, Sunday.
No way.
what was the inspiration for the show, American Televisions?
I had multiple inspirations, but the main one, the key one that really unlocked everything for me, I was at MoMA PS1 back in 2007. And I remember rounding a corner and suddenly seeing this giant carpet on the wall, and it had been skinned from a mobile home. And you could see where the doorway had been, you could see where a couch had been, you could see where a TV set had been, and you could also see stains from food and drink and cigarette burns. And I suddenly saw just a family's life living on, like it was a family's life that happened all at once. Everything happening, and it felt like a palimpsest. And it also somehow flashed me back to the mobile home that I grew up in when I was a child. And it allowed me to draw from my personal experience what I thought like could not be art and turn it into art and turn it into a story and tell the story of this particular family living in this home. And that artist is Rodney McMillian, who I wrote his name down and then forgot or lost that piece of paper and was only reunited with his name like literally a month ago.
It's amazing. Wow. Victor, you used to make telenovelas and put them on social media. How did the experience of making these novellas and on social media influence you as a playwright and this play in particular?
Yeah, so I think, I used to, right after the election of that monster, I started to make a social media telenovela called El Amor en Tiempos de Trump, love in the times of Trump. And it was a very queer narrative, like nonlinear narrative that was really just like a bunch of us clowning around in drag and making like, making not fun. I don't make fun of telenovelas. I love telenovelas. I love genre and I love exploring it and what it can do to us. And if anything, I think that social media telenovela is what allowed people to sort of see what my writing was doing, because I had written the play before, like the play is kind of, I started the play in 2007 and it had a hard, I think people had a hard time reading it up until they saw the kind of video work that I would do. And I think that created a context in terms of tone, style, and also the sort of melding and the merging of genres that I'm just so fascinated by.
Yeah, the merging of genres. Ruben, let me bring you into the conversation. The storytelling throughout the show is unconventional. There's live performance, there's live camera feeds, actors operating the cameras, pre-recorded video of Alejandro, Erica's dead brother. He comes in regularly. They come in regularly. Which aspects of directing this this production were exciting? And then what was one challenge that you just thought, okay, I got to get to work on this?
You know, I have such a unfortunately capacious answer, which is all of it was exciting. All of it seemed impossible, and felt like I needed to get to work on it. I think, you know, I had the great privilege of meeting Victor a few years back and beginning a conversation, not about the play, but actually about everything else, about art and politics and life, and the fact that we happen to be from the same border town area of El Paso Juarez. Our kind of, you know, crosses there and so forth. And so it really developed a relationship with the heart of the piece, which is really Victor and Victor's imagination. With my company, with Theater Me Too, the core of our work is about innovation, about pushing the boundaries of theater, and technology has been part and parcel for that. Mm-hmm. So in many ways, I feel like we've been preparing for these incredible asks that the play has done. And this use of technology, not as a background or a design element, but as something that's integrated into the work, into the storytelling, into the image making. Mm-hmm. And so when I first met the play, it seemed like a really gorgeous puzzle to me. And that's exactly the kind of work that Theater Me Too does. And I felt like, oh my God, like I obsessed about it every day. It became like a some kind of spiritual practice. I would, you know, for the 2 years that Victor and I started working on it, I would read a section and obsess about it all day and think, how do we interject memory as archive, memory as healing, healing as technology, technology as game, game as witness, right? These kind of endless cycles. And how does one perform that? And how does one make the images for it? So I think not at all, you know, hopping out of the question, but truly, I think every time I flipped the page, I felt like, all right, keep rolling up our sleeves. And I'm very grateful not only to Victor for inviting us on this journey, but to my company collaborators who jumped on board with, you know, sleeves rolled up for sure, which has been exciting.
Victor, the play opens with Erica setting the scene. We're in a Walmart. What does Walmart represent for her family?
Walmart is that promise of abundance, of having your needs met. It's a promise of everything being restocked, of always being able to have what you need. And I think that's very close to what we felt the American dream was. And in writing it, I also researched Walmart and the history of Walmart and how it started and just how innovative Walmart was and in its institution of like how to build a store and how everything is essentially programmed, right? Like you walk into the doors and the aisles are pre-selected for you so that it knows how we shop, it knows how we move. And I just felt that was so interesting, and that what we think is a free experience, what we think that we're making choices as a consumer, those choices have already been made for us. And I wanted to explore that, explore desire that is already in some way that we're influenced by desire. Another way that we're influenced by desire, I think, is like through media, through television. And so it just all melded together. Walmart as this place where we could find drama, we could find love, we could find comedy and fantasy and tragedy as well.
My guests are Victor Cazares, the playwright, and Ruben Pulendo, the director of American Televisions. Ruben, I'm going to do a little bit of description of the set, and then I'm going to ask you to jump in. So there are four large cubes that have doors that open, and they almost look like they're shipping container-like material, maybe. They're rust-colored, and every time you open one, there's a living room scene in one. There's the toy aisle in another. There's the front of a 18-wheeler on top of the other one. The other one has a... it's like a television screen where we see Alejandro, the dead brother, dead son. I'm going to leave it there. What am I missing? And tell us a little bit about this staging and what is exciting about it to you as a director.
Sure. That's a gorgeous description of the set. I'll only add, I'll go a little bit, you know, from the root of it. One of the things, going back to your first question, that was so exciting about this play was its relationship to time. And this is a lot of the work that interests myself and my collaborators in theater majors. How do we perform time, right? There's, of course, the traditional inheritance of storytelling through a horizontal timeline, right? So event A leads to B leads to C. Victor does something really interesting in this play, which is Victor shifts the timeline to a vertical stance. What I mean by that is that everything in the story has happened, is happening, and will happen. Right. So all of a sudden we have this freedom to jump through essentially the way that memory works. Right. And the way that we experience time, which is a multiplicity. And so the question became, how does that take shape in the architecture? And how does that actually take shape, therefore, in the bodies moving through that architecture? And so the space really necessitated a kind of largeness to it, which is, I hope you would agree that when you walk into the theater, there's this epic confrontation with what feels like this white vacuum space with what we call these four either monoliths because of their scale, but also pixels because of the close-up that they allow. So all of a sudden, again, we're inhabiting multiple realities to it. And the hope is that when they open, you're able to view into these pixels, this kind of detail. So you don't get a full living room, you get a sequence of one, right? You don't get a full 18-wheeler, you get something that's been slashed from the front of the 18-wheeler in the way that memory keeps these kind of pieces and particles. And then the entirety of the set are all projection screens and surfaces. So every wall, every single is either a rear projection screen or a front projection screen, and really comes to life. So all of a sudden, what you thought was there is also the space where things can ghost through, appear, disappear, and offer portals into it. And so the space really becomes a dynamicism of time. But again, this pixel idea became a really meaningful one as a way to explore time.
I'm curious about the character of Jeremy, Victor. Jeremy is Erica's friend who's into Barbie dolls, and they have this deal that allows Erica to have her parents buy Barbies for him and Jeremy's parents buy toy trucks for her so they can play with each other's toys. And Jeremy seems to be there always for Erica. And I was curious because the actor who plays Jeremy has leg braces and uses a walker. Is that something that was written into your script? Is it just the actor who played Jeremy was gangbusters and you wanted that actor?
Yeah. So the role of Jeremy is, I'll just start with saying that the role of Jeremy is that friend that gets us through life, right? And that we are, especially as children coming from homes that like aren't exactly happy homes, and the way that friends can carry us out. And likewise, those friends are with us because maybe their own home life is not great. And the way we create shelter, the way we create queer families together. And the role as written is not written for, it says Jeremy is the neighbor next door, the gay neighbor next door. And I saw Ryan J. Haddad do a one person cabaret show at Joe's Pub. And I just saw him, and I was like, oh, this is Jeremy. He understands exactly the role of fantasy. He understands exactly the role of art and how that pulls us through life, how that gets us out of our towns, out of wherever the shadows that we're in. And we'll talk to, so Ryan is an actor with cerebral palsy. Mm-hmm. And when I talked to him, like, hey, I want you to play this role. He told me that this was like the first time that somebody had offered him like a role like wow. this that was not written for an actor with a disability. And I just found that really shocking that this doesn't happen more often because mm-hmm. it is, it's vital. It's vital. Yeah. Like, we need to see actors.
All kinds of actors
shouldn't be limiting. Exactly.
You see
exactly.
all kinds of people getting exactly. opportunities.
Exactly.
As we start to wrap up, I want to say that the play deals with themes of family, of loss, of grief. Ruben, what is something you hope people discuss after seeing the show?
I think so much of the show has to do with, yes, our past, and perhaps some of that past may have injury or trauma, shapes us. But it doesn't control us. And the ability to see a character travel and navigate through that, and to do it through a whole host of entry points and grammars and genre and so forth, my hope is that it allows a whole host of audiences to connect to it, right? So some may connect through the family experience, some through the poetry, some through the video game language, some through the space of telenovelas and imagination, right? It has so many gorgeous entry points. And to me, that's why the play was so moving upon meeting it, not just because of the puzzle, but because that puzzle allowed for these points of connection. But so much for me is really about a space of power, a space of healing,
yeah.
and a space of what it is that we do to keep our lives moving forward and growing and developing. And so I'm very grateful for the opportunity to be working on this piece.
American Televisions is at New York Theater Workshop. I've been speaking with its playwright, Victor Cazares, and director, Ruben Polendo. Thank you for making the time today.
Thank you so much for having us.
This is All of It.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.